The Rights to Ricky Sanchez podcast is brought to you by LL Pavorsky Jewelers, where Rights to Ricky Sanchez listeners go and get engaged. Big Barker Therapeutic Dog Beds. Get yours at bigbarker.com/Ricky. Kornblau and Kornblau, the official law firm of The Process. The Colony Meadery, the official gluten-free booze made from honey of The Process. And Kinetic Skateboard Shop. Get 9.1% off your first order with promo code Dave Silver. All one word. Basketball is back. Sixers basketball is back after just another strange offseason. Just wonderful. Markelle Fultz played and Ben Simmons played and nobody shot three-pointers, so we will talk about that and every other player we saw and what we thought, and we will take a look back at Elton Brand's big contract with the Sixers in 2008 and the context surrounding it with Andrew Unterberger. Without any further ado, here is Run the Jewels.
We are the murderous pair that went to jail and we murdered the murderers there. Then went to hell and discovered the devil delivered some hurt and despair. Used to have powder to push, now I smoke pounds of the push. Holy, I'm burning the bush. Now I give a fuck about none of this shit. Two runner over and out of this bitch. Step into the spotlight. Copying of uppers and downers get done. I'm in a rush to be numb. Dropping a thousand ain't much.
Welcome to the Rights to Ricky Sanchez podcast. I'm Spike Eskin, along with a guy who shoots jumpers, but only from 15 feet away. That is Mike Levin. Morning, Mike.
Good morning. Here we are again.
Basketball, once again. Unfortunately, wow. We tried to stave it off, and it would not happen. We worked so hard. You know, all the controversies over the summer, but here we are with basketball again.
It is weird to watch the Sixers play basketball. It feels like we've had such a strange summer. And then they get on the court, they play a team from a different country, and it's like nothing changed.
Yeah, here we are again. Here we are. And we have, how many Australians do we have? Do we only have two?
Two.
Ben and Bolden. Right. Oh, yeah, so sort of three. All right, so, you know, I think the obvious thing to start talking about is that aside from all of the controversies, the biggest thing over the summer that we talked about in terms of basketball, which is obviously low on the totem pole of things that we care about, but as far as basketball, is Ben Simmons shooting jumpers and Markelle Fultz shooting jumpers. And we saw a combination from them of 0 3-pointers, one jumper in the fourth quarter from Fultz, one jumper outside of 10 feet.
Two. He made one. He had two on like back-to-back possessions. One was short.
Oh, right. You're right. I thought the second one was short. Whatever. So I guess my question would be that I know it is a one-game sample size, but still it is a sample size more than we've had. Given all that we talked about over the summer, if I make you choose whether you are encouraged by last night or disappointed by last night in that specific aspect, what would you say?
I would say in the middle of that. So, but if I have to choose one, I would probably say disappointed.
Yeah. Yeah, I think. Yeah, go ahead.
Because you want to see the shot. And you're playing against a team of Casper Ware's, so why not just say like, fuck it, I'm gonna take a three, I'm just gonna do it, and who cares? And it's fine. I mean, look, I also see the reasoning, like, we can get to the basket on this team whenever we want to win, we want to score, why risk it? I don't know. I would have loved to have seen both of them just be like, this couldn't be any more of a fake game. Let's just unload.
I think you can, and I will get progressively more positive as the podcast goes on. But we can talk in circles to convince ourselves that it was okay. That we didn't see either of them like take a wide open shot like that, but I think it is obviously, to your point, a little disconcerting that for this team that like they are not going to face a less competent team for the rest of the season. That is the least competent team. And you could tell, and that's not an insult to the Melbourne team. It's just like it is what it is.
Dude, they're listening. They're going to be pissed off. It's going to be our rivals now.
They were so obviously from the opening tip physically like inferior in every way that the fact that there were, I think, two specific ones where Fultz was around the three-point line, had it wide open, and decided instead to just run into a defender who was 7 feet away and either get blocked or stripped. And it's just that there's so little time. Yeah, I think that not that I don't think he can get there, but the expectations are so high this year, and there is so little time between now and the start of the season to make it work. And the fact that Ben still obviously is not going to be like a shooter. I mean, he already, or at all, really. He said as much. Makes that combination of those two more difficult than it looked last night. Yeah, I think it was just everyone's like, you got to give it time, and it's just been so long. You know what I mean? That more time just seems like I don't know how much they have to get him integrated in a real way.
Yeah, maybe the more realistic expectation is they'll both do the same things that they did last year, but be a little better at it. And if that's the case, then that's good in some sense, but it would be nice if they just went for it and said, you know, if we're open and the ball gets swung to us, we're going to step into a three. And maybe it happens.
Maybe. I mean, I don't want to, you know, I'm focusing on, it's almost like, it's funny, I'll focus on Fultz and say that he needs to do it while sort of like just glossing over the Simmons thing, because it's sort of unfair in that he's already set the expectation in that he's not going to do it. And we've just sort of accepted he's good without it. But it was a thing, obviously, from both of them. It's shooting. You know, this is sort of my thing about basketball, but it's shooting basketball, and they're both guard type players. And, you know, Simmons now isn't a point guard, he said last night. But and if they're both not going to shoot wide open threes, whether they are off the catch or off the dribble, it's you know, it creates a lot of issues in playing them together this year. And I think for Fultz, you know, when you're looking for the future, and again, just one game, but if you're looking for the future with him as a player on the team or trade asset, and I think the trade asset is a little more realistic than people consider, only because even if he's good, it's going to take him a couple of years to become what he is. Because he's just I think he's less developed in terms of ready to contribute right now, even if he could shoot, than Simmons or Embiid. And I think their timeline might be quicker. And his reluctance to shoot, I think, makes him less valuable in that respect, too. So,
yeah, I would agree with that. I think that there's been, you know, whispers, you don't know if you trust him or not, about, you know, is Fultz being made available in a Jimmy Butler trade? Elton went on Zach Lowe's podcast, as we talked about, and basically said the timeline is Ben's new contract for us to get another guy.
Which is this year or next year, yeah.
If you're going to dangle Fultz, I don't know. I mean, I would love for Fultz to just, like, be successful here and figure it out and grow together, and we have that work going for us. But I agree that it'll take some time before he's the best version of himself, for sure. And I think we can both agree that, as we said before, it's more important for him to have a jump shot than it is for Ben, who's already been very successful without one. But yeah. I would love for just both to just start, especially in a game like last night. It would have been great to see them both, almost like it's on the playground, just like, all right, we're taking him.
Yeah, and Ben is, this is just the reality of the situation, is just more he's 6'10", he's more physically imposing, and And to your point, he's done it. I mean, he has been the focal point of the offensive focal point, at least in terms of the ball handler of a 52-win team. So that it just puts him in a further along spot than Fultz. And when I say that Fultz won't be ready for 2-3 years, I mean, that is more like the history of guards when they come into the NBA. Especially lead guards, it just takes a little while. You know, I look at how long it's taken so many of the guys the last 10 years when they come in that young, and he basically gave away an entire year last year. You know, that was a year of on-court development that we didn't get. So that puts him behind the eight ball a little bit.
But that being said, the foul shots both went in.
Yes, for sure.
Looked a little bit, I mean, we can dissect it a million times. It looked a little strange. But I don't know, until he gets comfortable and plays, you know, 70 some games, and we just see him, it's just like he's there every day. It's still such a novelty to see what he's doing, and it's gonna be so under the microscope that everything he does is gonna look like, is that weird? How about this? Is this strange?
Right.
So
right.
I don't know if that's the case or if I'm just reading into it, but it did, like, the fast shooting form looked a little like his hands were out of rhythm with like his feet, and like when he like rose up on his tippy toes, like it wasn't timed in a normal way. I don't know, but
yeah, like his hands were late. Like, so I know this is a little before your time, but the way Anthony Mason used to shoot free throws is that the ball would go up and then like he would almost let it go like late or something. It
way
always
late.
Felt weird. Yeah. And that's now the 15 footer that went in looked like a normal jumper.
Yeah.
I think mostly. So, you know, that is when he's thinking less and it's a little more natural, and that's a good sign. I think like what is clear is that it is not fixed by any means, but Hanlon certainly, if we are looking to get from 1 to 10, Hanlon looks like he certainly got him from 1 to 4 or 5. You know, like there is a clear difference between this year and last year, but it isn't, I think, where we had hoped. So,
yeah, and I wonder, we haven't seen much of a victory lap from Hanlon. We haven't seen him do the like media tour and you know, rub his dick on everybody and all the outlets that said he couldn't do it or something. So he's still with the team, which makes me think that, like, he's not quite ready yet, or he's not happy with his progress, or maybe not progress, but how the end result quite yet. So I wonder if it's going to be, you know, realistically, we talk about this, guys don't get better at, like, a certain skill over the course of a season. Usually they don't add a skill because there's just not enough time, not enough practice time and stuff. But I wonder, is he going to be with the team the whole season? Is he going to be on and off? Like, what does that look like really? But I, you know, from how much he was talking beforehand to he's not really talking now. I wonder, how he feels about this thing. Like, what's the status report basically in his mind?
Speaking of dick rubbing, did you see the video last night or no?
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, he's not rubbing his dick over all everyone about the jump shot, but it does look like there's some action going on there.
So that looked to me like it was more like it was tight on his thigh and his girlfriend was like helping him, but like it didn't look.
No, did you see he tweeted me a picture of what was actually going on?
I didn't see that.
Okay. So he responded to me and he was like, "That's funny, but my girlfriend was looking for her phone." And I'm like, I respond, I'm like, "Drew, where was your phone? Where was her phone then?" And he clearly went to the team, got a high quality photo that shows that his phone or a phone is underneath his leg and that she was looking for her phone or something like that.
Wow.
it was,
I'm glad you're getting this right from the source.
Yeah, right from the source. Yeah, well, I mean, you know, I like whatever. I don't think anyone imagined that he was getting, you know, having sex on the sidelines. before we get to, we got to talk about every other player too. Before we do, let's talk about our sponsor, Kornblau and Kornblau, the official law firm of The Process, also the official law firm of the VIP section of the Live Ricky 3. Very important.
How about those t-shirts?
How about those t-shirts? They say VIP on them. They say Kornblau and Kornblau on them. You can't even buy those. You can buy the regular ones, but you can't buy the Kornblau ones. It is the premier boutique personal injury law firm in the Delaware Valley. You are getting Kornblau service from a Kornblau. You're not getting shipped off to anyone else. Any sort of personal injury that is medical malpractice, that is their specialty in their 40 years when Kornblau's parents started this law firm. But slip and fall, injured at work, car accidents, all that stuff. If you are in an accident, Kornblau has two rules. Well, three rules. Don't lie. Don't be a hero. The third rule, call or email Kornblau. He will take you through what is a frustrating, oftentimes long process that is a personal injury lawsuit. But he'll make you feel like you know what's going on, and he will make you less frustrated because he's a good guy that cares, and he sponsors VIP sections of Live Rickies and buys t-shirts to give everyone. That's the kind of guy I want getting my personal injury lawsuit.
That's right.
If you think you might have a case, give him a call, shoot him an email. It doesn't cost you anything. 215-576-7200, ask for Adam, or email Kornblau at kornblauandkornblau.com. The Kornblau is spelled with a K. The rest, or fuck, man. I mean, how many times?
How many times?
Kornblau is spelled with a K. The and is spelled out A-N-D. And the rest?
Is spelled with a K.
And this podcast also brought to you by the official jeweler of the Rights to Ricky Sanchez podcast, LL Pavorsky Jewelers. Mike, we have finally broke 100 engagement rings sold to Rights to Ricky Sanchez listeners. We are up to 102.
My God.
Unbelievable. I stopped by LL Pavorsky Jewelers this week to record a little video for the 100th Rights to Ricky Sanchez. I couldn't be there for it. I was going to surprise the guy, but I'm in Nashville. So I did a little video for the 100th ring. LL, this is the sort of guy that, this is how in on the podcast LL is. I found out that there is a giant Rights to Ricky Sanchez logo going up on the wall at LL Pavorsky Jewelers. Do you know what I thought about the other day? I was like, first of all, LL is that, look, if you're going to buy an engagement ring, if you go anywhere else, you're a moron. That's basically what I'm going to say. You're a moron. This guy is obviously going to take care of you if you're a Ricky listener. He's putting I wouldn't put the fucking logo on my own wall. I thought to myself, what does Jake think?
Right? I would love to know what Jake thinks.
Like, we might have to chase Jake down for an interview. He's going to give you the best price. He's going to get you the best jewelry, and he is going to, he gives away this to only to Ricky listeners. You get this box for the engagement ring that slips in your pocket. It isn't big. That way, you can surprise her when you make your her or him when you propose. He's the best. Before you go in to get an engagement ring, make sure you call him, make an appointment so he can have everything set up for you. 215-627-2252. You can email him at llpavorsky.com. You can tweet him at llpavorsky. And for every podcast, LL makes generous donations to Coded by Kids and the Providence Animal Center. LL Pavorsky Jewelers.
Alienating his other customers since 2015.
So Markel, aside from the, I want to get to the other guys, obviously, but Markel, aside from the shot, the passing was pretty spectacular, I would say. And, man, that spin move, he's like me and Madden. I wonder how much that's going to work when guys are really guarding him, but it looks pretty impressive against, Australian, national teams, I guess.
Yeah. The passing was great. Just the little quick touch pass to Muscala after the Amir thing. The one drive and the just like reverse to Dario was nice. Found Embiid a little bit. He's a good passer, and it's not one of the first things people talk about, but he's a really, really good passer and has good court vision and is smart. I've talked about this before, but I would love to see him. Like, he's so smooth with his handle, and it doesn't look like he's going that fast, but he sort of glides. but he doesn't really add the element of like change of pace quite as much. He sort of just goes one speed and then drives in, and then, you know, a lot of times because they know he's not pulling up and he's not hasn't added a floater element to his game, that's why he runs into people a lot and doesn't sort of has these like awkward meetings. But I would love a little change of pace to add that in there. He seems he's going downhill, but it would be nice to sort of pull back a little bit occasionally to add that to it. But yeah, the passing's great, handle's great. Would love to see a little floater added in there. He's really good. He's so talented. Just gotta have that jump shot. Gotta have it.
I do love the smoothness and the finding spots. That reminds me of, like, obviously that is the part of him that is Hardeny. And then the other guy that I like, obviously we want him to be better than this guy, but I love Evan Fournier's game, like his offensive game, which is sort of similar in that he is he finds spots, like Fultz seems to do a little bit, and is, you know, crafty and smooth around people rather than just powering or speeding by them. And I think he's got that to his game. That you're right. I mean, would be awesome. A skill that nobody else on the team really has right now, and would be really helpful if he's able to stay on the court. Simmons was I almost felt bad for the United guys, the way that Simmons was playing defense on them, and that it didn't seem like it sort of seemed like it when you're a grown up against eighth graders, and that he was. So he is so much more physically gifted that him playing defense like that seemed unfair.
And he's so much younger than those guys too. It's crazy.
Yeah, yeah. So that part looked great. I mean, Simmons just looked like Simmons to me. I didn't see anything specifically different.
I mean, except for specific plays. Simmons going off the backboard for the pass to himself was cool. Yep. And definitely added an element of like, this is an exhibition game for sure. And then loved Fultz's chase down block. That was fun to see.
Oh, it was incredible. I mean, that was the thing that, like, his sort of he is deceptively athletic in that he doesn't explode offensively, but when he does something like that, it's pretty impressive.
Yeah.
And then there was a quote from Simmons afterwards. If you remember my conspiracy theory or my tea leaves reading that ended up being right last year about Simmons's obsession with calling himself a point guard, it is obvious, like, so he the new sideline reporter is Serena Winters, and she tweeted out a quote last night. I didn't see him say it, but the quote is, "I don't look at myself as a point guard or a power forward or anything like that. I'm a player. I just want to be an all-around player. I don't want to limit myself to any one position," which is definitely a stark difference to things that he said last year. So I don't, maybe that is in response to Fultz being on the court, but I don't know. I thought it was funny that he said that last night.
Also, just wanted to point out that a lot of chumminess between Ben and Embiid. Seems like there's no ill feelings. I am going to be harping on that all season long. I am team, everybody's cool. There's no problems in the clubhouse. That'll be my hive.
I'm not on team they dislike each other. I'm on team their games are currently incongruent, and if that resolves, I think everything will be fine. You know, I never thought they hated each other. You either think they hate each other or they don't. So I guess I think they hate each other and you don't. So those will be our roles. So the rest of the team, rotation, with that China trip mixed in there, that is going to that takes away like a little camp stuff from Brett, I think. And I thought it was interesting that the rotation was so tight last night in the first three quarters. Rotation being Fultz, Simmons, Covington, Dario, and Embiid as the starters, Amir and Muscala, the bigs off the bench, Redick off the bench, and then Chandler, who obviously now won't be back until December with a strained hamstring, off the bench.
Wait, you were joking you're joking about December though, right?
No, I'm not. Well, I'm joking, but I'm not joking. I mean, when you're, what is he, 32? when you're that age, when you miss like 40 games a year, basically, and you have a hamstring, like that takes forever. I mean, my guess would be we don't see him again in the preseason, and then we'll see what happens when the season starts. Not that that's the worst thing in the world, but he's like the only bench wing we have that is NBA ready. So I think that that might be an issue if that lingers. But, you know, I thought we would see more Korkmaz, Bolden, and then TJ and Shamet. We don't see until the fourth quarter. But the TJ thing is going to rest, obviously, directly on the Fultz thing in a lot of ways.
Yeah. And I think it'll be a mix in. TJ's too good to not play him. And so I think he's going to, and they'll mix and match and stuff. Do you have any feelings about Redick off the bench?
I wish they didn't have to do it, to be honest with you. Like I think it is to it's interesting that when we asked Dario about starting, that it was so important to him. It seems like it is more natural to me to have a starting lineup of, if you're going to start Fultz, Redick, Covington, Simmons, and Embiid. But I thought JJ in the playoffs last year looked a little gassed at times, and maybe he's 34, 35 years old, whatever. And if playing him 25 minutes a game off the bench rather than playing him 32 minutes a game puts him in a better spot in the playoffs, I'm fine with that, you know, if that's what it ends up being. I don't, if you had to bet whether Redick or Fultz will start the year in the first game of the season, I would bet on Redick. Who would you bet on?
Yeah, I'd probably agree. I mean, I didn't even consider that it would be Redick when we asked Dario about it. I would say of the three of them, I don't know, maybe Redick's just like, yeah, I'm fine with whatever, which is good of him, and which should be the case as like a sort of, you know, one-year deal vet. That's what he should be doing. I'm glad he is. I'd probably still rather have Dario off the bench in that situation, just because giving another some more creation abilities, he can clumpy flump without Embiid on the court. As he was pivoting last night, Dario, I was like, I wonder if he's thinking about us. Is he thinking about us?
How could he
is
he not?
Is he thinking about us in the post as he's doing this thing? Because he should have been. I like Dario's skill set off the bench. Because I think there's some freedom if Fultz or Simmons is not on the court with him.
Well, and that clumpy flumping moment was a lot of Dario rolled up into one, in that he had not really touched the ball very much, and he just decided at that moment, I'm getting a bucket. I don't care how many times I have to pivot. To your point, no one's coming to double team. Like, he just took the ball and was like, can I just please get a bucket? Like, let me get a bucket. Let me see what it looks like for the ball to go through the hoop. He shoot two or three threes last night. They looked a little old Dario flat to me, but just, you know, first game.
Yeah,
but
Dario's a guy, I think we've said this before, but Dario's a guy where he's the easiest guy on the team for me to tell when the shot's going in or not.
Yeah.
Because if he's set and if he steps into it cleanly, it's going in. And if he's sort of if he doesn't get his feet there quick enough, or if the ball comes in a weird way, it's not. So I'm not worried about him. He's great.
No, yeah, he'll be. And he does look like, I was struck by when we didn't talk about this when we talked about the live Ricky, but I was struck by how thin he looked in person this year. He looked, I mean, I know he had supposedly lost weight to be able to try to guard wings, but he looked really thin to me, not in a bad way, in person. And I hope, you know, he's able to, you know, he looked, I don't know, did he look any quicker? It's hard to say when they're not guarding NBA players. But,
I'd love to see Dario shirtless workout pics, just like sweating in the gym, like highly edited, like... All that like stylized stuff. Give me some of
shadows
that.
Shadows, like, so
product,
we can see the abs.
Shadows, product placements. Let's do it.
Embiid. Look, he played a lot last night and did not seem to be laboring at all.
I saw a little bit early. I saw some conditioning.
Oh, really?
Just because, first full game, it seemed like he was... I mean, they were rusty. The whole team was rusty. Like, it was very clear. Like, they should have beat that team by 40, but because there's some just weirdness and stuff. But, you know, it's preseason. You're getting the kinks out. They're not getting fully up for this game, all that stuff. But I what looked like to me for Joe was the case that, like, I think he's just going to be – there's going to be a lot of bully ball this year. I think the jumper looks cleaner and looks smoother. But I do think he's going to – when he's getting in the post, I think he's determined to, like, not let people stop him. So there's going to be some offensive fouls, but there's also going to be some, you know, Shaq over Chris Dudley moments.
You know, if Joel Embiid is going to realize that people can't guard him, then and that is most of the NBA, then he's going to shoot a lot of foul shots and he's going to be really good this year.
Yeah, that's what I feel. Did you also – just a quick shout-out to his – Instagram story where he was at the Ed Sheeran concert and singing along, which was great.
Yeah, that was wonderful.
He's incredibly charming. And then when him and Dario, the video of him and Dario seeing each other for the first time, and Embiid's like, "You're not texting, you're not calling, you don't text me back." And Dario's like, "What do you mean? I didn't text you back." Like, it's just like, oh, I love these guys. I love these guys. They're such a nice team. They're nice boys. Come on. I love them.
I do love the idea of Shaq Embiid, forgetting fewer fadeaways and more just like, you can't guard me, dunks or free throws. I think that would, I'm looking forward to that if that is going to be part of him this year. Covington just looked like Covington, but there was one.
Classic Covington, 1 point, played a lot better than the box score said.
Here we are. There was one moment where he had a really strong dribble drive that looked like he was very sure of himself and controlled, and it was nice to see him do that.
Yeah, that's what people have been saying, that that's what he added this offseason. So nice to see. We'll see if that is more of the case.
Chandler, I mentioned already, just for some context, because I tweeted out a question last night, who plays more games this year, Joel Embiid or Wilson Chandler? And I got a couple of, like, what are you talking about? Here is Chandler's, like, last decade in the NBA. 74 games, 71 games, 0, 78, 62, 43, 8, 21, 51, 72, 65. Like, this is not a... Iron Man in terms of his health, and he's older now, and it's just that is the thing that is going to be that we're going to have to monitor as the season goes on, and obviously the team is going to have to look at, is that we have a real shortage of, like, wing players like that on the team, and it's, you know, I don't want to look ahead to Boston already, but he's going to need to stay on the court. They're going to need a body like Wilson Chandler this year. And if he's not going to be able to stay on the court, they're going to have to think about that at some point this year and try to resolve that.
Yeah, I agree. And that maybe makes the case for when you can not playing Simmons and Covington together, or at least giving them a little rest so you can have at least one of Simmons and Covington on the court at all times. Because you need one of those incredibly good wing players to just body somebody. And again, would love to see Korkmaz step into that role, not in the defensive end, but at least offensively. He's not a zero defensively, but clearly not doesn't have the man's body that the other guys do. And then I really do believe Zaire can become that in a sense. Not as big, maybe not covering fours quite as much, but he's so good and pesky that I think he can bring that pretty much right away. But now obviously Wilson and Zaire hurt. Hopefully Wilson will be back before the season starts, and hopefully Zaire by, you know, late November, December.
We'll talk about Zaire and Korkmaz in a second. Let's talk about our other sponsor for this podcast, Mike. It's the Colony Meadery. Not meat, but mead.
Mead.
Mead is the official alcoholic beverage of the Rights to Ricky Sanchez podcast. There is, I like to say, there's not only no gluten in the mead, but it would be illegal for them to put gluten in the mead. It is a, it's made from honey. Mead has been around forever, but the Colony Meadery stepped up. They trusted the honey gluten-free process, and they do it the right way. Million different flavors, all good. We had two of them. We had the tea one, the tea time, and I think we had mini mead at the live Ricky 3.
Very tasty. One flavor that wasn't there because of a cease and desist order.
Yeah. We won't name that one, but there was a flavor that did not make an appearance. That won't make another appearance, actually. But there is, here, I'll hint at this. We won't say there is a flavor coming in October that is very exciting. A very exciting flavor from the Colony Meadery. The mini mead is a mead from raspberry blossom honey that you had if you had it at the live Ricky. Yeah.
I did have
all different sorts. Yeah, all different sorts of flavors. They have the birch mead. You can order it online at thecolonymeadery.com and colonymeadery.com. Use code Ricky for $5 off. It is in every Wegmans in Eastern PA. It's at Trolley Car Station in Philly. It's at the Fooderies in Philly. You can go up to the tap room in Allentown. You can try all the meads at the Colony Meadery tap room in Allentown. They'll give you a tour. So, look, if you're sick of what you're drinking, you're sick of your drink, you're sick of your beer, you're sick of your cider, mead from the Colony Meadery is your next step. Again, order at colonymeadery.com. Use code Ricky for $5 off and keep your eyes and ears open for the special new flavor coming in October. Must be 21 to drink. Please get buzzed responsibly. So Korkmaz, I don't think, is going to be part of the rotation this year. My eyes tell me normally when I say that when you say you're going to eye test, it means that you don't really have any evidence. But when I watch Furkan Korkmaz, I don't like see an NBA player right now.
Oh.
To my eyes. Yeah.
Well, you were in person when he dropped 40 in Summer League. So
yeah, that is correct. You did see him closer with your eyes than I saw.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's prone to getting like skittish, and if he gets bumped off his spot, he gets pretty useless quickly, and so he does still need to get stronger. I do believe he's gotten a little bit stronger year to year. I kind of wish he didn't play in the international so he could have just worked on his body, but I really like his skill set, and I have since I drafted him. I think he's got the kind of rare, like he can just be a spot shooter and stuff, but he has some stuff in his bag where he can pass a little bit off the dribble. He can have a little floater. I'm excited about the potential still. I just wish that he was stronger because he still needs to add to his body. But I think he'll get in there from time to time, especially if any of... Did you just FaceTime me?
It was an accident. I'm sorry.
That was crazy.
We're good.
I'm sorry. Like, we're what's good. Happening? Am I done talking? Yeah. Okay, yeah. Especially if anybody gets hurt or Redick or something is ineffective. I think Cork might, they might need his 3-point shooting at a time. So I'm not going to write him off. I believe in him. I do like him more than Bayless. I don't know. I feel bad for Bayless. We can talk about him now. I feel bad about the booing that always upsets me. He's a nice guy. He's a thoughtful guy. I hate his jump shot. I love that he dunked, like, emphatically.
Yeah.
But
one quick thing before we get to Bayless. One more quick Korkmaz thing. If he isn't going to be stronger, I just wish he was faster.
Like, yeah, I hear you.
He's just caught in this world. And remember, forever, he and TLC have ruined Euro YouTube for me.
Because I know.
They both looked so much faster on YouTube than they do in real life.
What is it? What is the phenomenon?
Well, it's sort of like, I know that, not that
the air quality in Europe?
I think it's just the players they're playing against that are slower.
But even just in like dunk contest stuff.
Yes. I swear, when I was watching these guys on their YouTube, they looked like fucking Zach LaVine. And they get here, and Korkmaz looks like his feet are too big for his legs when he runs. I don't know what's going on. I also feel bad for Bayless. And I, you know, looking back on his time here, which will be all 3 years, obviously, unless there's a big trade and we need salary filler. So I don't have any inside information on this. This is just sort of me putting two and two together. When he had that wrist injury, I think that wrist injury might have been here when they signed him, and or it happened right away. And I think not that he was ever like really good, but he was never between missing the season with the injury and then trying to come back. And then I don't think he has been right since he hurt his wrist. And I do think that in general, he is a guy who can play 12 to 15 minutes on a real team and hit a couple buckets, but he's just not that, that might be gone. And I do feel really bad that he gets booed. I know it's booing Colangelo by proxy. Bayless didn't sign himself to that deal. He's just here, but I do feel bad for him.
Yeah. That's a charitable explanation. And I respect and admire that you did that. That's a very non-Spike thing to do.
And so, what, give him an excuse?
Give him an excuse. That's really nice. That's good for you, man.
Thanks.
Muscala, I don't love him and Amir together. I just don't think that there's enough dynamic play there. I think Muscala's best, you know, I think he can handle himself on the perimeter defensively, but I think his best attribute is that he's a stretch five. And so let him be that. And so I would stagger those minutes or use one in one matchup and like mix it up, whatever it is. Because Amir at the rim last year wasn't as good. And I don't know how much value Amir is giving you.
Yeah, I agree. I think Muscala is either a stretch five, or he is a guy that you play with Embiid, maybe when Simmons isn't on the floor.
Yeah.
You know, like that can be Ilyasova-y, at least offensively. And you can play a lineup where all five guys can shoot, or that's a Fultz lineup, where Fultz is playing with Redick and Covington and Muscala and Embiid, and it's a pretty, you know, a shooty lineup. I was impressed with, obviously I didn't watch a lot of Mike Muscala before he got here, but I was, not that he's a super athlete, but it seemed like he could keep up athletically, and I thought that was, you know, he doesn't look super slow or plodding or anything like that. You know?
Yeah, no, he's good.
Bolden looks like a spaz to me.
Yeah.
A little bit.
He hit that 1-3 in the corner that looked very clean, and I was like, okay, this is a good clean look. He flashed and he just went right up with it clean. And then he was 1-for-4 from the line, right? And then kind of was just all over the place. I think he's got a long way to go. I don't know if he'll ever put it together, but I think he'll be a guy that Brett just like can't trust for a while. Maybe he spends time in the G League, I don't know. But I don't see him ever really cracking the rotation.
Yeah, he plays a lot younger than he is. You know, it looks like he just learned how to play basketball 2 years ago. I mean, he just, spastic is the word that comes to mind. And I did love seeing TJ get in there in the fourth and break one of those Australian guys down off the dribble pretty hard. Oh, I just want to back up for 1 second. Embiid needs to chill out during preseason games. I don't need him. I love how hard he plays. And I mentioned this during his induction speech, but like the one block where he hurt the Australian guy, like was... It just wasn't a chance that I want him taking in an exhibition preseason game against Melbourne United, you know? I just want him to chill out a little bit. That's all.
I want him to go get every block he can. Pad those preseason stats, baby.
Andrew Unterberger, for his appearance on the pod this week, he asked me yesterday whether I wanted something from the game or something Elton Brand related. And he was very passionate about doing something Elton Brand related. So I'm excited to see what he has. Like I told AU for his appearances every week, he's got to bring something weird, and he is committed to doing that. So I'm all about weird. Andrew Unterberger, brought to you by Kinetic Skateboarding in Wilmington, Delaware. It was great to meet Ben, the owner of Kinetic Skateboarding.
Yeah.
Ben's brother is Andrew Jones, who is Eliza Hardy Jones's husband.
Crazy. Didn't know that.
It's crazy. Yeah. Kinetic Skateboarding, locally owned, process trusting in Wilmington, Delaware. And not just skateboards, because I don't skateboard, but I love Kinetic. Shirts, shoes, and shirts, shorts, and sneakers. Vans, Converse, Nikes that you're not going to find anywhere else. Get 9.1% off your first order with promo code Dave Silver, all one word, at checkout, kineticskateboarding.com. Now, I'll intro you here. So, Andrew Unterberger, as I mentioned, you promised something Elton Brand related. So, tell us about your deep Elton Brand dive.
Well, yeah, this is just something that I was thinking a lot about even before EB turned, you know, even before it was announced that EB was going to be the general manager. But I just wanted to kind of dive back into this period because it's interesting in a lot of ways, and it reflects on, you know, the Sixers' current search for a big name free agent to add, and it kind of shows how far we've come in a lot of ways as a franchise and just as like basketball thinkers in general. So quick context, because we're all about context here on the Ricky, for people who don't remember. This was after the Sixers' 2007-08 season, where they made the playoffs in the first year without Iverson after trading him for Andre Miller. It was Andre Miller and Andre Iguodala, Lou Williams, rookie Thad. They went 40-42. They lost in six to the Pistons in the first round, but everyone was really encouraged by it because they were doing, you know, better than most of the previews of the season had the Sixers being 14th or 15th in the East, and everybody thought it was going to be a long rebuild after Iverson, but they kind of exceeded expectations. It was the run with us year. They were a fast, up-tempo team and pretty exciting, and maybe a little bit too exciting because I think people kind of got ahead of themselves about a 40-42 team that, you know, just barely put a scare into a Pistons team that was basically coasting at that point anyway. And Elton Brand, he was coming off, 2006, he led the Clippers to the second round. 2007, they missed the playoffs, and he tore his Achilles in 08. He only played 8 games. But I think he was only 29. There was still a lot of expectation that he was a top 10 caliber player. And the Clippers, he opted out of the last year of his contract, and the presumption was that he was going to re-sign with them long term, but he was going to opt out to so that they could have the space to lure other free agents at the time. Do you guys remember who they ended up attracting to LA with their vaunted cap space?
Oh,
was it?
Oh man, who?
Who the Clippers signed with their cap space? It was the Chris Kaman era. I don't remember.
So they got Elton's good buddy Baron Davis.
That was Baron Davis, because Baron thought he was going to. Because Baron thought he was coming to LA for Elton. That's right.
Yeah, I mean they were friends. I think they were going to make movies together, and they were going to kind of rebuild the Clippers and into a contender. But there was some issue with Elton Brand's agent, David Falk. Adrian Wojnarowski, was quoted Mike Dunleavy, who was then the Clippers GM, saying that that David Falk was trying to poison Elton against them. And David Falk says that the Clippers did shady dealings, dealing both with Falk and with Brand separately. And so he kind of turned EB against the Clippers. The Warriors tried to attract him to Golden State, which would have been crazy because, you know, that's where Baron Davis was coming from. But instead, he signs with Philly for 5 years and $80 million. They called it the Philly Max at the time because it wasn't a proper Max, but it was as close as we could offer. And there were actually two cap clearing trades that I'd forgotten that the Sixers had made. One was in the season before that, and one was just leading up to it in the offseason. Do you guys remember what either of those trades were?
Oh, I don't remember at all.
No. I remember where I was working at the time, which was a AAA on the Boulevard. But that's it.
Good times for everybody, yeah. So the first one, which happened during the season before, was the Kyle Korver trade. They traded him to Utah for Gordon Giricek and a first rounder. First rounder was then dealt along with Calvin Booth and Rodney Carney, who had been a first round pick the year before for the Sixers, to Minnesota, just as a kind of a pure cap clearing move. I think we got a second rounder that was top 55 protected and ended up never conveying at all. That first rounder, though, ends up going to Washington and becomes Trevor Booker, who of course is an eventual Sixer as well.
Wow!
But we ended up getting Carney back, and Carney to me is like a pre-process Sixer.
100%.
Because we would have, we would have all loved fucking Rodney Carney during the process era. We would have loved him. He was Jeremy Grant. Like,
I think,
you know,
he had. Did he like? Was he like? Did he use tights before tights were cool? I kind of think he did.
Ooh, it seems like he would have.
Yeah, he was definitely like a 3-and-D guy without the 3, and you kind of talked yourself into him developing that over time, but it never quite happened.
Yeah.
Yeah, very proto process for sure. But like, I was just reading back on a lot of the analysis of the EB signing, and it really shows how uneducated we were about Achilles injuries 10 years ago, because nobody seems that concerned about it. Like Henry Abbott, Jay Adande, Mark Stein, they're all just like raving about what a great sign this is for the Sixers. Mark Stein calls it an undeniable coup for Philadelphia on a variety of levels. Charlie Rosen of Fox News gives the signing an A+, and he calls Elton one of the most dynamic scorers in the league. Even John Hollinger, who's kind of like, you know, king nerd among NBA analysis at the time, like he writes a story for ESPN titled "Brand New Sixers Are Instant East Challengers." And he says that conservatively, he says, let's be conservative, saying that Brand isn't quite the player he was before the Achilles injury, puts up a PER of only about 20. He says they will conservatively win 52 games the next year. Do you guys want to guess what Elton's PER was that first year with the Sixers?
I think it was like
12, 14, 13.
14.7.
14.6. Very good, Mike.
Woo! Wow. How about that? I remember... What I remember most about Elton is Eddie Jordan making him come off the bench and like feeling so awful for him. That was like true restraint. That like Elton Brand not bad mouthing Eddie Jordan was the most restraint I think I've seen an NBA player show in a long time.
I remember nothing about that Eddie Jordan season basically, but the first season I think was still Mo Cheeks and. The other funny things about this at the time with the analysis that was coming out about it, one of them was that the only person that really seemed concerned about Elton's Achilles was Clippers owner Donald Sterling. When Mike Dunleavy talks about it in interviews later, he says that Elton started demanding more money and he would have been fine with it, but Donald Sterling says. He's coming off Achilles surgery, and I know he's a great player, but I'm a little reluctant to put that kind of money on the board, which is actually like a very prudent thing to do. And it's crazy that Donald Sterling was the only person in the room with that kind of perspective. But the other funny things were that.
Can we stop just for 1 second? I just wanted to go back to something that you said. Like, and I know you made the point, but it's only been 10 years, and the fact that. You know, we look back on it and say, well, of course Elton Brand wouldn't add that many wins and would be trouble off of the Achilles injury. But, like, nobody thought that that was going to be trouble. It wasn't even that long ago, you know? It's crazy to me how quickly everyone seems to have learned. You know, the knowledge base of everyone has increased so much in such a short amount of time that you giving that perspective is almost amazing. Like it seems like something that you would have guessed would have been true in like 1987 or 1993, but not in 2007.
Yeah, and that even the smart people seem to think that. I mean, like, I was wondering if maybe it was just the case that, like, you know, back then we were only reading two or three people, and they were the kind of. You know, Phil Sheridan of the Daily News, who was over the moon about the signing, and then that's probably not that surprising. But the fact that, like, even the deep analysts and, like, the stats guys, I guess there just wasn't that much information about Achilles tears yet. I think Dominique Wilkins had one in the 90s, but I guess maybe there just wasn't enough data to go there and show, like, just how precipitously everybody tends to drop off after having that injury. But, yeah, it's pretty crazy. And the other thing that's pretty crazy is that people really thought that Elton going east was going to swing the balance of power between the conferences. There was some thought that, Rashard Lewis had done it to the Magic, and then the Celtics had assembled their big three mostly from Western Conference stars. And they thought that Elton was kind of the final piece of the puzzle to finally getting some sort of equity between the two conferences. 10 years later, we're still talking about that not being the case, and we seem further away from that than ever.
Go ahead.
Oh yeah, the other kind of historical anomaly I found was just people trying to talk themselves into Elton Brand fitting into a run and gun team, yeah, it's Stefanski says something about like, oh, this guy's the prototype power forward. He can run. And they ask Mike D'Antoni about it, who had some history playing Elton with the Suns teams in the West. And he's like, sure, if you want to say that, yeah, let's say, yeah, oh, yeah, he's such a great player. I'm sure they'll figure it out. But he's the only person that seems to understand this is just not going to work with a guy who's, you know, one leg shorter than the other, and he can't run and he can't jump. And it turns out even worse than I think the most pessimistic people could have predicted.
Yeah, I do think it is easy to forget how, you know, the game was different at the time. It's easy to forget how good Elton Brand was until he tore his Achilles.
Sure.
Like, looking at his stats, and this is obviously not defending the signing or anything like that, and, you know, and this has nothing, this has very little to do with the fact that he came to the Live Ricky and was on the pod. But when you, and I think he met, Zach Lowe mentioned this a little bit when he was on the pod, when you look at his numbers pre-injury, he was going to be a Hall of Famer. Like, yeah. His rookie year, like, listen to the, this is just points and rebounds. And he was a good defender, and he remained a good defender till the end of his career. Like, he defended centers, like, admirably. I watched him drive Dwight Howard nuts, and this is the end of his career. But, this is until the injury. 20 and 10. Those are his first 2 years in the NBA. 20 and 10, 20 and 10. 18 and 11.6. 18.5 and 11.3. 20 and 10. 20 and 9.5. 24.7 and 10. And then 20.5 and 6. And then 17 and 8. Like, that is, like, that's a Hall of Famer. You know, that is a Hall of Fame type player, and it does make you wonder what happens with his career if he doesn't tear the Achilles, you know, because he still had a bunch of years before the new NBA took over. Like, the because I really do think, too, even in new NBA, he could be small ball five. You know, like, I think he could play a Draymond Green type role. Like, he was a good enough mid-range shooter and a good enough passer and a good enough defender to do something like that. I guess I'm overrating him a little bit, but he was very, very, very good before he hurt himself.
No, I think Draymond Green's actually he's a pretty good point of comparison, I think. Yeah, they have similar body types. They have similar kind of strengths and weaknesses. I guess Draymond's a little bit better of a playmaker, but Elton was maybe a little bit, you know, more of a post player, a little bit tougher presence down low. I'm sure that there would have, like, if he had been on one of those D'Antoni teams, they probably would have found some really interesting things to do with him even later in his career. And as you sort of mentioned, like, you know, he does eventually with the Sixers kind of redefine himself, and he becomes, you know, he's a good mid-range shooter, he's a good post defender, he's a good leader and locker room guy, and he figures out how to be a presence on the boards, and he figures out how to kind of play in a team running concept. And he was probably the most valuable player on a couple of those Doug Collins Sixers teams. But the first year is a total disaster. The first year, he only plays 29 games. He can't run. He can't jump. And he tore his shoulder, I think, 2 months into the season. He tries to come back from that, but eventually decides to get season-ending surgery. So the Sixers were 40-42 the year before. Do you remember what they finished that year?
Wait, which year? Oh, his first year?
His first year.
God, that's got to be, what, a 37-win team or something like that?
Well, they do finish 41-41, mostly because Iguodala was awesome, and Andre Miller still had some really good years left. Yeah. But, they again get bounced in six in the playoffs. It's almost the exact same series as the Pistons series. Yeah, they take a 2-1 lead, everyone gets really excited, and then they just get creamed for the last three games. And even that last game, the game six without Dwight Howard, who got suspended after elbowing Samuel Dalembert in the head, and they got beat by 30 or something. So same sort of idea. In his end-of-season rankings, Bill Simmons ranks Elton Brand 450 out of 450 in his MVP power rankings. And he says that not only did he tank the Sixers, but because his kind of betrayal leads the Clippers to overspend elsewhere, and the Warriors, who miss out on him, also like spends, you know, $70 million on Corey Maggette. He says you could argue that Brand murdered one franchise and gravely wounded two others. But so that was a wrap. Jeez. On Elton's first year. But obviously, comes a great Sixer
and
anyway.
Some more historical context, just numbers-wise, on Elton's career, because you were talking about his PER, like a 20 PER his first season. Until he gets injured, Elton's PERs, 20.6, 20.4, 23.6, 21.7, 23.2, 22.4, 26.5, 23. And then here's the amazing thing. So he has those two first disaster seasons with the Sixers. The first one where he only plays 29 games and then the Eddie Jordan year. But then he has in 2010, 2011 and 2011, 2012, you know, when those Doug Collins teams, like 18.5 and 18, you know, for a guy obviously past his prime, you know, had a couple, as far as win shares, had two pretty solid years. So it is amazing, I think, in retrospect, how close Elton Brand is to a Hall of Fame type player. And it is a bummer that he tore that Achilles.
Yeah, it's also a testament. You know, Philly fans always talk about how we'll love you here as long as you work hard and as long as you're gritty and you show that you care and all that shit. And I think that's selectively true. I think that it's true with some people and not with others. But the fact that Elton contract, it was so debilitating at the time, and those first couple of years were so disappointing. But by the end of the contract, I feel like it was nothing but love for Elton in the city, and the old school Chevy nickname, and the last couple of years with Doug Collins, where they made the playoffs and they made a respectable push, even if it didn't end up amounting to all that much at the end. By the time he left, and then he was amnestied, which is kind of crazy to think about now. But by the time that happened, I feel like everybody kind of remembers Elton's stay with the Sixers fondly, which is not the case of most players who don't really live up to those max type expectations. And I think it really does go back to him being a workhorse type player and a locker room leader and just generally kind of being a good Sixer. And that's a boon to him. And it's also a commendable of Philly fans that they stuck by him and that they remember the good times more than the bad times with EB.
Yeah. And Zach Lowe did mention to him, he's like, you'll probably be the only player, the only guy who ends up being a general manager for the team that amnestied him. And I think that is a fair prediction to make. So, well, thanks, Mitt. So we lost, because Mike had a hard out, we lost Mike about halfway through, but that does mean you got to do the thing. Sorry, buddy. We'll be back the middle of this week. We're into a full 2 Ricky a week, the season is going type stuff. And we have a game on Monday, right? There's the Orlando game is the last game before China. So, all right, AU, you got to do it. Are you down with TTP?
All right, let me do this in my best mic voice possible. Yeah, you know, lick face.
We are the murderous pair. That went to jail and we murdered the murderers there. Then went to hell and discovered the devil delivered some hurt and despair. Used to have power to push. Now I smoke pounds of the push. Holy, I'm burning the bush. Now I give a fuck about none of this shit. Two runner over and out of this bitch. Step into the spotlight. Copying of uppers and downers get done. I'm in a rush to be numb. Dropping 1,000 ain't much. Cup on the clouds on a missile to turn.